Trevor, so this is actually a historic event because we are beginning the second parak of Sukkah, which the Mishnah tells me, "Hayoshin tachas hamita besukah lo yotza yintei chovaso." If a person sleeps under the bed in a sukkah, such a person does not fulfill his obligation. That's the first halacha in the Mishnah. Why not? Why don't I get the mitzvah of sukkah if I'm under the bed? So what does Rashi say?
That is an ohel.
Rashi says that the bed is an ohel, and therefore the bed is an ohel, and it's mapsik between you and the sukkah. That's Rashi's comment. Bed is a halach of ohel mapsik, and therefore it's as if I am not in the sukkah. That's Rashi's comment. The Rif, however, phrases it slightly differently. Does anyone remember how the Rif phrases this? So the Rif on Yud Amud Aleph Bedafei HaRif. The Rif writes that if I'm under the bed in a sukkah, Naaseis Kisukkah Betoch HaSukkah. Right, it's a striking formulation of the Rif, no? It's like a sukkah inside a sukkah. It's not a sukkah inside a sukkah. It's a bed in a sukkah. That bed is not a sukkah. So what does the Rif mean when he says it is like a sukkah inside a sukkah? So it's not exactly clear why the Rif is saying this. What is the dispute between Rashi and the Rif? It is possible that what the Rif is, or let me, it is possible that the type of beds which they had, at least at the time of the Rif, were beds that would be halachically considered a sukkah. Like my bed has like lots of pieces of wood, and the mattress is on the wood, no? Isn't that the way many bed frames are? That you have wood that supports the mattress? So it could be that that wood on the fundamental level is considered like a sukkah. In their times, I don't know if they slept on mattresses. If they have a cloth on top of the schach, so we saw the halacha in the first perek, is that if the cloth is there for decorative purposes and the like, it could be that that does not invalidate the sukkah. So it's entirely possible that the Rif is just saying that the bed I am sleeping under is a bed which halachically meets the sukkah standards. I think that's a possibility. And based on this, there's no real machlokas, Rashi and the Rif. They're just talking about two different types of beds. Rashi's talking about a bed that's an ohel. It's a normal structure. And the Rif is talking about sukkah under a sukkah. Now, it's also possible, and this is the way Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says it, that the Rif is coming to what we would say in Yiddish is Barvara Nakasha. There's a question that the Rif is coming to answer. And the question is like this: if I am under a bed in a sukkah, am I in the sukkah? Yes. No, I'm in the sukkah. You ask, like, remember Old Family Feud? Like 1,000 people surveyed, top whatever answers on the board, right? You ask, right, 1,000 people, are you in the sukkah? You're in the sukkah. You're under a bed, but you're still in the sukkah. So why would it be that I am not yotzei the mitzvah when, after all, I'm in the sukkah? So the Rif invokes a halacha of a sukkah tachas a sukkah. That halacha tells me that even though I am surrounded by sukkah all around me, nonetheless, I'm not mekayem the mitzvah of sukkah. The Rif might not be saying that it is really sukkah tachas a sukkah. What the Rif might mean is that from the halacha of sukkah tachas sukkah, I see that we do not say that you are completely enveloped in the larger sukkah and therefore should consequently get the mitzvah. Another suggestion that we could have over here, again, so let's just go slowly. The first suggestion, I think, is that Rashi and the Rif are not disagreeing. Rashi is saying that it's midin ohel. The Rif is saying it's sukkah tachas a sukkah because it's talking about two different types of beds. That's the first suggestion. The second suggestion is also that Rashi and the Rif are not really disagreeing. The thing is that the Rif is coming to answer a question. The question of how come I don't get the mitzvah? After all, I'm inside a sukkah. I'm inside the big sukkah. So the Rif will say, you know what? No, from sukkah tachas a sukkah, you see that you do not get the mitzvah in that case. A third suggestion might be.
Can you clarify a little bit on the second suggestion?
Yes.
You said that it's like you are not enveloped in the larger sukkah, but it's not saying that the bed is forming its own sukkah or ohel. It's like, what kind of structure is it?
Again, I'm under a bed inside a sukkah, but the shaila is whether I get the mitzvah of sukkah.
Right.
And do I get the mitzvah of sukkah? Well, am I inside a sukkah? Yes, I'm inside a sukkah. So why do I not get the mitzvah if I'm inside the sukkah? So the Rif answers that I'm not exactly sure why you don't get the mitzvah, but I know from this halacha of sukkah tachas hasukkah that you don't get the mitzvah. The halacha of sukkah tachas hasukkah tells me that I see when I'm inside one structure that's inside the larger sukkah, I don't just say that that smaller structure is nothing, and it's as if I am sitting in the full sukkah. No, the halacha of sukkah tachas sukkah tells me that I do not get the mitzvah when I am inside smaller structure in larger structure. Did I?
Okay. Yeah.
Now, it's also possible that the Rif is coming from this angle. Sukkah, I'm under a bed in the sukkah. Rashi wants to say it's an ohel. The Gemara is going to tell me that we're talking about a bed which is 10 tefachim tall. Says the Rif, if the reason why it's pasul is because of ohel, so to be an ohel, you don't need 10 tefachim. The halacha of ohel is relevant for many areas of halacha, like we've seen, including the dinam of tumah. And by the dinam of tumah, one tefach is an ohel in yanei tumah, no? All you need is one tefach. So zach the Rif. We're not talking about the halacha of ohel, because were we to be talking about the halacha of ohel, so you would not need 10 tefachim. Rather, I'm talking about the din of sukkah tachas hasukkah, and that is why it is puzzle. It's puzzle because you need 10 tefachim to create that minimum-sized sukkah. This approach number three within the Rif, is actually the approach that Tosfos takes. No? If you remember, back on Daf Yud, we had a discussion about if I have two sukkahs, one on top of the other, how much space do I need between them to have a problem with sukkah tachas hasukkah, right? No one is going to say, right, this is the reductio ad absurdum. No one is going to say that if I have two levels of stach, if I have two pieces of bamboo, one on top of the other, that I'm not yotzei because sukkah tachas hasukkah. Right? Obviously, it has to be that there's some space between them. So on Yoram and Aleph, Rav Huna says one tefach between them is enough to make a psalm sukkah, because by tumah, one tefach is enough. Rabbi Rav Huna says four tefachim, because throughout halacha, makom chashuv is four tefachim. Four tefachim is a significant area on Hilchos Shabbos, that becomes Rishus HaYochid, etc. Rav Yehuda says, right, or excuse me, Shmuel says in the Gemara, kehechshera kach psula, that just like a sukkah is kosher when it's 10 tefachim tall, so also sukkah tachas a sukkah has to be 10 tefachim tall. Taisvis over here comments, yeah, let's look at this first taisvis. Right, b'gemara mukila Shmuel, b'gavoa asara. The Gemara is going to say that according to Shmuel, we're talking about the sukkah, that the bed, I should say, the bed is 10 tefachim tall. Depachos mikan lo chashiv ohel lahafsek. If it's less than 10 tefachim, it is not an ohel to be mafsek. Umatzina lemeimar the Shmuel letamei, who says in the first perek, tachtona kesha'im elyona asara. Right, that Shmuel says that if the lower sukkah is less than 10 tefachim, it is not going to be a problem of sukkah tachas sukkah. But according to everybody else, even if it's less than 10 tefachim, it's going to be a problem. Meaning, if I read the Taisis correctly, and I'm doing a little bit of doctor's work in reading this Taisis, I think when Tosis uses the word ohel, he does not mean ohel the same as Rashi means it. I think by invoking the Gemara on Daf Yud, what Tosis is really saying is that the sugya which is relevant is the sugya of sukkah tachas hasukkah, the sugya that the Rif mentioned. But Tosis speaks about ohel because that's a shorthand way of saying that the lower sukkah is significant. What Tosis is getting at is that our Gemara that says that the bed has to be 10 tefachim tall is Shmuel l'shitaso, because Shmuel tells me on Daf Yud that sukkah tachas hasukkah is a problem only if it is 10 tefachim. So Tosis is invoking the sugya of sukkah tachas hasukkah in explanation of our Gemara. So the first sugya, or the first point in Taisvus, is that perhaps our Gemara is based on the rules of sukkah tachas sukkah. However, Tosis uses the word ohel rather than sukkah tachas sukkah, but he effectively means the same thing. But then Tosis has a different suggestion of a shema. Let me just pause. Am I going too quickly over here? We good? Thumbs up? Okay. Excellent. Siskel and Ebert. Good. Givaldi. So then Tosa says Vishema. Right? Tosa has another suggestion. What's that suggestion?
That it's a temporary structure.
That the bed is
the bed is a temporary structure.
And therefore?
A temporary structure. So then there becomes a debate about, does a temporary structure within a keva structure matter?
Right. And so Tosis is invoking that the Gemara later on will say within Reb Yehuda that a sukkah is a permanent structure. I think we discussed this on the WhatsApp a bit this week, mm-hmm. that the sukkah, according to Rav Yehuda, is a permanent structure, the bed is a temporary structure. But Tosis is going a step further with this idea of temporary structure. Tosis is saying, because a bed is a temporary structure, therefore, everybody would agree that it has to be 10 tefachim tall. Although the Gemara on Yud Amud Aleph has three shittos about sukkah tachas hasukkah, how much space do you need for it to be a problem? The three shittos are 10 tefachim, 4 tefachim, or 1 tefach. But Zach Taisus, that might be true only when it's a sukkah tachas a sukkah. And a sukkah is a semi-permanent structure, so much so that Rabbi Yehuda defines it like it's ohel keva, like it's diras keva. Because a sukkah is a semi-permanent structure, so that's why there are three shittos, 1, 4, or 10. But by a bed, which is arai, according to everybody, the bed is definitely a temporary structure. So then it for sure has to be 10 fucking tall. That's Isis' suggestion.
When you say 10 fucking tall, when you say 10 fucking tall, you mean a gap between the schach and the bed of 10 fucking.
So I don't think so. In our context, I think we're talking about the bed is 10 fucking tall. And therefore, when you're under the bed, you are in a separate area as opposed to the sukkah. If the bed would be a very low bed, I think in Israel, beds tend to be like 3 feet lower than beds in the United States for some reason, right? If you're on a very low, if you're underneath a very low bed, it's not a problem because it doesn't count as an ohel, right? Or it doesn't, it's not the equivalent of a sukkah tachas hasukkah. That's the way the sugi gets put together.
Okay.
Now, effectively, what we got to so far is as follows. There seems to be a machlokas Rashi on the Rif. Is the psul because of ohel or because of sukkah tachas hasukkah? Within Tosfos, there is some room for confusion, I'd say, because Tosis is invoking a Gemara about sukkah tachas hasukkah, but he uses the term ohel. There are achronim who say that if the psul is based on sukkah tachas hasukkah, so we know that's a din d'oraisa. However, if the psul is based on ohel, so it could be that it's only a psul midrabbanan. Because this idea of sukkah tachas hasukkah, the Gemara learned that from a pasuk, no, basukos teshvu or something, and basukos is written without the vav. We're going to read it like it's basukas, so you should only sit in one sukkah. But the halacha that if I'm in one ohel, under another ohel, that halacha was not derived from any pasuk or anything. So it's entirely possible that that din is entirely midrabbanan. The Bach assumes that according to the reason of sukkah tachas hasukkah, it's a psul d'oraisa. But according to the reason of ohel, it's a psul d'rabbanan. There is another school of thought, however, that even according to the Rif, that who invokes sukkah tachas hasukkah, like we pointed out already, it's not really a sukkah tachas hasukkah. The Rif is using sukkah tachas hasukkah kind of as a melitza, as just an expression. And therefore, maybe even according to the Rif, it's a din d'rabbanan. The nafgamina, if it's a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabbanan, is as follows. The first night of Sukkot, or forget the first night of Sukkot. If the psul is only a psul d'rabbanan, if I have no other thing that I can fulfill my mitzvah with, I should do it. If I'm yotzei min ha-Torah, but midrabbanan, I'm not yotzei, so then I should sit in that sukkah. Now again, it's hard to construct a case that it's a sukkah tachas hasukkah and you have no alternative. I don't know exactly what the mitzvah of the case would be, But the fact is, I'm like stumbling on my words tonight. The fact is that if it is a psul d'rabbanan, we could argue that if there's no alternative, you fulfill or you should sit in such a sukkah. I think that is a fair thing to maintain. Okay, ladies, any questions or comments or observations on this point? Ms. Gutman, how is Judaism?
Judaism's doing, you know, as it always is. The Tosfos, the second answer that he gives, I didn't understand the connection between the Arai and that a sukkah has to be 10 tefachim. Like,
yeah.
The fact that it's Arai seemed relevant.
I think what Tosfos means is as follows. A bed is not really a permanent structure. People take their beds, they move them. It's not a permanent structure. A sukkah under a sukkah, each sukkah is a semi-permanent structure, right? That's why Rabbi Yehuda classifies sukkah as diras keva, the Chachamim classifies sukkah as diras arai, because by definition, a sukkah is a semi-permanent structure. Perhaps, says Taisus, Shema, since a bed is a temporary structure, so therefore all will agree that the bed has to be 10 tefachim tall to create a problem. By a sukkah under a sukkah, there are three positions in the Gemara Daf Yud. Some say 1, some say 4, some say 10. But that is a sukkah tachas a sukkah, somewhat permanent structure. But a bed, which is entirely, what's it called? A bed, which is entirely temporary, so we could say that unless it is 10 tefachim tall, you do not get the mitzvah of sukkah. Unless it's 10 tefachim tall, it does not impede your fulfillment of the mitzvah of sukkah.
But don't both the Dira Keva people and the Dira Rai people think the requisite amount for a sukkah is 10 tefachim? Or no, that's the whole definition.
Again, everyone holds the requisite amount for a sukkah is 10 tefachim. The question, though, is, by a there is a dispute whether sukkah is diras kevar, sukkah is diras arai. That dispute basically means that your standard sukkah is semi-permanent. When I have something that's semi-permanent, some people will say, oh, that's keva. Some people say, no, it's arai. By definition, a sukkah is a questionably permanent structure, which means some say it's permanent, some say it's not. Some say it's keva, some say it's arai. But a bed for sure is arai. Because the bed is certainly arai, Tosa suggests that's why everyone holds the bed has to be 10 tefachim tall to create a problem. Even though there are some who say that a sukkah tachas hasukkah is only a problem if it's 1 tefach or 4 tefachim, but all agree that under a bed is going to be a problem only if the bed is 10 tefachim. Because precisely because that bed is arai, so we have to buttress it. We have to make it more significant and give it a height of 10 tefachim to create a problem.
Okay, thank you.
Tanya.
I'm not remembering, but we talked about a kila hasanim.
Yes.
And I felt like we were talking about 10 tefachim there as well.
So, by kila hasanim, the issue is you're under a bed. The bed has to be 10 tefachim. There's a question, though, if it's teepee shaped, right? Can that still be an ohel? To impede, does it have to be 1 tefach wide at the top to be considered an ohel? I think that's the issue. If I sleep in a teepee, kilas chasam, sleeping like in the teepee inside the sukkah, so that's the sugya. That sugya relates more to the roof. Over here, we're dealing more about with the size of the walls rather than the roof. The bed itself is flat. It's 1 tefach. That's not a question. Good.
I have a question. So we're saying, Hi, Rabbi Schwartz. We're saying every single bed in the world is a rai, or a bed specifically within a sukkah, because it seems like a sukkah bed would be even more so. It's not going to be there for any amount of time beyond sukkahs.
Right. I'm not sure. I would suggest that what it means is that the standard bed is a rai. The standard bed that a person has is like a movable thing. Like people move their cots from here to there. A sukkah, even though it's temporary, but the fact that the Torah tells me to build it gives it more significance than the bed that's always moved from place to place, or ordinarily is moved from place to place. That's what I would say. Okay, ladies, let's go back to this first Rashi. So far, we did two words in the Rashi. Right? If I sleep under a bed, I don't get the mitzvah. Rashi says, Ohel mafsik beino l'sukkah. What's the problem with the next six words in Rashi? So there's a difficulty in the next. Is there someone saying something in the background? Hi, Sima.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I don't know if my headphones are working. It just seems unrelated. First of all, he says, Ikar Yeshivat Hasukkah, so sitting in a sukkah, and here he's Yashen Tafat. And then he's talking about eating and, like, eating and drinking, which this guy isn't doing. I don't know, just seems unrelated.
Ah, okay, so this is the problem. Good. Rashi writes, Ikar Yeshivat Sukkah, the main mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah. Remember, the Torah says, Basukos Teshvu. So the mitzvah is Yeshiva Sukkah. The mitzvah of a sukkah is eating, drinking, and sleeping. I don't know if you remember in Sesame Street, like one of these things is not like the others, right? Eating has to be in the sukkah. Sleeping has to be in the sukkah. Drinking does not have to be in the sukkah. Even if I'm drinking wine, does not have to be in the sukkah. Me ikar hadin, wine does not require a sukkah. Last year I was in quarantine on Sukkot. Because of various of my children who had COVID. I actually wrote an article in the Mishpacha magazine this past week, just to try to get my firm credentials. Since I teach women Gemara, so I'm losing my firm credentials, I figured I had to write something for Mishpacha magazine. But I was in quarantine, so I'm not supposed to go and eat in the sukkah. On the other hand, I'm not really sick, so I'm really mechuyev in the sukkah. So I spoke to Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter says, yeah, go out to the sukkah when no one else is there. So I had Nick, the super from Mount Sinai, open the sukkah for me at 11:30 at night. And I went into the sukkah and I had my seuda, etc. The problem is I didn't want to starve until 11:30 at night. So what am I going to do? Right? I can't eat outside of the sukkah. And I can't eat without Kiddush. I can't like even nibble without Kiddush because it's Yontif. So Rav Schechter agreed with my suggestion. I made Kiddush on wine at home. I drank an extra revius of wine to be able to Kiddush Makom Seuda that way. And I ate my chicken or whatever I ate. And then 11:30 at night, I went into the sukkah and I made Kiddush and Hamotzi, etc. Right? I made... Again, I made a Bari Priya Gof and Hamotzi. I was Yotzei the real Kiddush beforehand. Now, I'm drinking wine outside the sukkah. That's fine. Wine does not require a sukkah. Drinking does not require any sukkah. Eating, if you're eating bread or mizonos more than the size of a kibetza, needs a sukkah. Sleeping needs a sukkah. Drinking, even if it's wine, does not require a sukkah. Again, the beer halacha gets like, very complicated. Chafetz Chaim is very frum. He has like a whole discussion. Maybe you do require a sukkah on wine. Baker, I think you don't require a sukkah. I'm not so frum. I have to admit, I make havdalah at home when on sukkah in the heights. sukkahs is harder than almost every other community because you have to walk like 2 blocks to get to your sukkah. So to walk 2 blocks to just make havdalah, I would make havdalah at home. No? Because wine doesn't really require a sukkah. Okay. So how come Rashi over here is saying that the mitzvah sukkah is achila, shtia, and shena? Why is Rashi saying drinking also? Drinking does not require sukkah. So the Mishnah Brura has a chiddush, which many people are not aware of. It could be that there are those who disagree, even if they are aware. But the Mishnah Brura's chiddush is as follows. The Mishnah Brura writes that maybe drinking outside of the sukkah is only permitted if I'm drinking. But if I'm in the middle of a meal, if I'm in the middle of a bread meal, so what I drink is a chelek of the meal. It's part of the meal. And then I cannot drink outside of the sukkah. So if I'm in the middle of a meal, I can't take a drink in the house. Because the drinking is part of the seuda in that case. So maybe that's the pshat in Rashi, right? Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach suggests that maybe Rashi is alluding to this chiddush of the Mishnah Brura that drinking has to be done in the sukkah when it's drinking in the middle of a meal. Maybe that's the chiddush of drinking according to Rashi. Good.
I'm just looking at the Mishnah on Chaf Hey, where it says Ochlin Vishosin Arai Chutzl Sukkah, and it makes it sound like I'm just saying that there's even a proof in the Mishnah. I feel like that's consistent with the Mishnah Brura that there's such a thing as Shosin Arai.
Yes, I think that's the in other words, you're saying that there's such a thing as Shosin Keva. The Mishnah says that if it's Arai, it's okay. But that would imply that there is some sort of drinking that cannot be done outside of the sukkah if it's not shtiya arai. Right? So I think that's actually the proof that the Mishnah Brura brings to this idea, that the Mishnah uses the term shosin arai. I think that might be his proof. But yeah, that's a good horror. The fact is, it's strange. It's very strange that the word shtiyah keeps on appearing when it's really not required in a sukkah, unless you want to suggest this chiddush in the Mishnah Brura. Okay, any questions or comments? I know, like, you've been excited about getting onto the rest of this conversation about mitzvah seishas ma'agrama, etc., but there's more to say besides that. Then the Mishnah tells us, Am Reb Yehuda nohagen haginu shayinu shenin tachas hamita b'fnei hazakenim v'lo amru lanu davar. Reb Yehuda says, we used to sleep under the bed. No one said anything. The Gemara is going to explain later on that this is because Reb Yehuda holds that the bed is an ohel arai and the sukkah is an ohel keva, and the ohel arai is not mevata the ohel keva, so therefore they would sleep under the bed in Reb Yehuda land. I'm Reb Shimon. Masa b'tevi avdosh Reb Gamliel shal yoshin tachas hamita. Reb Gamliel is a kainim isin tevi avdi shetamad chacham yodeh shavon epitur min ha-mitzvah min ha-sukkah, excuse me, lefigach yoshin tachas hamita. Ulefi darkenu lamanu shal yoshin tachas hamita lo yotzi dechovasim. Right? Tevi is like the superstar of an Eved. Right? He wins Eved of the Year. So Tevi sleeps under the bed in the sukkah. And Rabbi Gamliel like pats himself on the back, where he says, oh, my servant, he's a bigger Talmud Chacham than your servant. Right? My servant knows that Avodim are exempt from sukkah. That's why he's sleeping under the sukkah, under the bed. That's what Tosfit, that's what I'm Mamish going drunk. That's what the Mishnah says, that my Eved knows that he is exempt from sukkah, and therefore he sleeps under the bed in the sukkah. Now, Taisus over here comments that the impression you get is that Tevi slept under the bed because he knew if he would not have been under the bed, he would have been told not to be there. No? Tosus says that by sukkah, it's michu biyado chachomim mileishev basukkah, shaharei hayyoshin tachas hamita. Tosus is saying that you would get the impression that Tevi is sleeping under the bed because he knows that if he would not be under the bed, the Chachamim would tell him, hey, Tevi, you're not supposed to be here. You're an Eved. You're exempt from mitzvahs. You don't belong in the sukkah. In order to solve that problem, in order not to be screamed at, Tevi goes under the bed. And what Rabbi Gamliel is really saying is, I didn't even have to say anything to him. He knew exactly what I was thinking, and he crawled under the bed right away. That is the way Taisvis quotes from the Yerushalmi in explanation of our Mishnah. That means, in Yerushalmi Lashon, that michu biyado chachanim, that the rabbis would protest when the Eved does a mitzvah. The problem is that Tevi used to wear tefillin. V'lo michu biyado chachanim. And the rabbis never made a whole stink about that. So the Yerushalmi is asking a question. Which one is it? Is it michu biyado chachanim or lo michu biyado chachanim? So the Yerushalmi answers that really Tevi could have been inside the sukkah. The rabbis would not have protested. The only thing is that Tevi also had Ben Adam Achaveiro smarts. And he knew that if he's going to be in the sukkah, he's going to be taking away space from those who are actually mechuyev in the sukkah. So that's why he stayed outside of the, that's why he went under the bed. Right? Tevi, the halacha is, lo michu biyado chachamim. The chachamim wouldn't care if the eved does a mitzvah. Do a mitzvah as much as you want. How come Tevi wasn't in the sukkah the normal way? The answer is because Tevi did not want to take up sukkah space from everybody else. If he doesn't want to take up sukkah space, so how come he doesn't just stay outside of the sukkah? The Yerushalmi asks. Yerushalmi answers, he doesn't stay outside the sukkah because he wanted to hear the Divrei Torah. So, to some extent, if we put all of this together, now I think we have a better understanding of Rabbi Gamliel's brag. My servant Tevi is such a Talmud Chacham. Meaning, right, he wants to hear Divrei Torah. He's a Talmud Chacham. And that's why he's under the bed. He could have been outside of the sukkah. But he's under the bed because he loves Torah. He's a Talmud Chacham, right? If you put all of it together, I think it ends up being much more beautiful, no?
Rabbi Schwartz, I bet many of us in this room can relate to this because we've not eaten in the house, even though there's no part under the kosher sukkah. Like, I've definitely had this where I've been outside and like there's more Zmiros and more like Avira of Yontif. So those of us who want to be around that stay outside, even if we're not going to be in the kosher sukkah.
Right. I mean, again, like the sukkah at my parents' house is built in the way that there is a large overhang. It's questionable whether it's too large for Dofen Akuma or not. It's like a really big overhang. Even if it could be Dofen Akuma, we know that you're not allowed to sit under Dofen Akuma. So it always was that my sister and her daughters would sit on that part of the sukkah because they're not really like mechuyev in sukkah. And all the men in the family would sit in the part of the sukkah where it didn't have that issue. Like that. But the advantage of, like you said, to be in the avira of the sukkah, even if you're not in fulfillment of the mitzvah, but to be there, to experience it, that itself is very special. For Tevi, it was more than that even, because he wanted to hear the Divrei Torah. And that's what Rabbi Gamliel means when he says that my servant Tevi is mamish Talmud Chacham. Now, when the Yerushalmi has the question about michu b'yadom chachamim, lo michu b'yadom chachamim, do the chachamim protest when an eved does mitzvos, or do they not protest when an eved does mitzvos? So the Ran over here has a... The Ran is bothered by Akasha. He says, how can you compare tefillin to sukkah? By tefillin, there is a potential iser to wear tefillin if you're not obligated in it, because the Ran says that is zilzol in the kedusha of tefillin. Right? This is the top line in the Ran on Yoram and Aleph, B'dafei Harif. There's a discussion whether it's michu b'yadim chachamim, if the Eved blows shofar in Rosh Hashanah. There's a potential iser in blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah. The potential iser is, you're like playing a musical instrument. We don't play musical instruments on Yom Tov. The Gemara in Chagiga has a discussion, Noshim Somchos Rishos or not. Right? Can women do smicha on the carbon? There's a potential iser in that sugya because you're mishtamish b'kodshim, right? The way you do smicha is you push your hands down on the animal, right? And that you're not allowed to do that on Yom Tov unless you're obligated to do so. By the way, just a quick Yom Kippur question that the Gerei Rebbe, the Chiddushei Harim, asked. You know, the halacha is that vidui has to be done standing up on Yom HaKippurim, no? Or year. To be mekayim the mitzvah vidui, unless you're a shtivmer, unless it's vidui when you're about to die, you're supposed to stand up to do vidui. Therefore, the Achronim say when you say tefillah zakah before Yom HaKippurim, you should say it's standing, because that's a vidui. The Dushay Harim asks the Kasha, it's Dushay Harim, the Imre Emes, one of the Gerei Rebbes asks the Kasha. He says, well, one of the examples of vidui is the vidui that the Kohen Gadol says on the par. And you have to say that with smicha. When you do smicha, when you're leaning on something to such an extent that if they would remove that thing, you would go tumbling over, then you're not standing. If the halacha is that vidui has to be standing, how is there vidui on the par of the Kohen Gadol? Because he's doing it with smicha, and the smicha might be that you're not standing. And these are the type of kashas I like. I don't know. Okay. Say I'm boring. Fine. But here's the thing. Zok the Ran, by all of these cases where there is a discussion, whether it's michu b'yadom chachamim, lo michu b'yadom chachamim, all of those cases, by smicha, there's a potential iser. Right, you're being mishtamesh behema on Shabbos, Yom Tov. By shofar, there's a potential iser. By tefillin, there's a potential iser. But by sukkah, what's the potential iser? How can you, in the Yerushalmi, possibly make an equation between sukkah and these other cases? The equation of, oh, how come it's michu b'yadam chachamim over there, not over here? Right? I would tell you that sukkah, there's no iser at all. So what is the hava amina, the Ran asks. What could possibly be the hava amina that it would be michu b'yadam chachamim by sukkah? That's the Ran's passion. So does anyone, right? The Ran has like a lot of interesting points over here. He gets involved in, you know, all the sugyas of how Yonah ben Amittai's wife was Ola L'Regel. No, doesn't that come up in this Ran? And Micha bas Sha'ol.
Michal does. And if you go to that reference in Erevin, it talks about Yonah's wife.
Oh, and that Yonah's wife also. For full disclosure, Zoe gave a shir about this on Shabbos, right? But Micha bas Sha'ol heisam aneches tefillin. Right? That's all the same discussion. Would the Chachamim protest when a woman does mitzvos? And Eved has the same chi of a mitzvos like an Isha. So it's the same conversation in the Ran. But the Ran asks, how on earth can you equate sukkah to the other mitzvos when in the other cases there is some avera potentially involved? The lack of the zilzal and the kedusha of tefillin, etc. That's the Ran's kasha.
Can I ask how you would translate zilzal?
I would say lowering, or it somehow is lowering the kedusha of the tefillin, or perhaps debasing, degrading, something along those lines. Now,
would it be like desanctifying, or it's like a different term than that?
Desanctifying. In other words, I'm not exactly sure what the Ran means when he says zilzal in the kedusha of tefillin. It could be that he means that tefillin have such high kedusha that if you're not obligated, you shouldn't put them on. Or it could be that it's based on this notion that the Rishonim mention, this gufnaki idea, which again, I cannot explain. But perhaps that was the issue that the Rishonim over here are alluding to when they speak about zilzal kedusha. Perhaps that's the issue. Again, in terms of the gufnaki issue, once that comes up, my understanding of it is that today our standards of hygiene are much higher than the standards of hygiene were in previous times. For when you don't have indoor plumbing and you don't have ability to shower and to bathe regularly, so the gufnaki issue for women is more than it is for men. That's what I would argue. But again, I'm not sure. This is just the way it makes sense to me. Obviously, there's much more to be said about this, but you clearly have to deal with the fact that the Rishonim are using expressions like zilzal kedusha. What that means is not clear. But the Ran asks, how can you compare sukkah to tefillin? So the Ran has two answers. One answer is that they were protesting the michu b'yadam is because we don't want you to make a bracha on it. Or they don't want the eved to make a bracha. And by equation, that would mean their michu, in the case of the women, by micha bas sha'ol, lo michu b'yado chachamim, would mean that even though she was presumably wearing tefillin, and there's a concern that she would make a bracha, one of two things could be said. If you hold lo mifu b'yadu chachamim, that could mean that women are able to make a bracha a mitzvah saseh shazman grama, which is the standard Ashkenazi psak of the Rebbe Nitam. Or it could mean that they had such trust in Michal Bas Shaul that they knew that she would wear tefillin and she would not make a bracha. They're not worried of the potential of bracha levatola by Michal. That's another way of looking at it. But be it as it may, approach one in the Ran is that the issue of michu b'yada chachamim and lo michu b'yada chachamim relates to the bracha. Approach two in the Ran is that the issue of michu b'yada chachamim and lo michu b'yada chachamim is, listen, by sukkah there's no problem. What's the big deal? You're saying in the sukkah there's no zilzul kedusha, there's no problem. But we might be worried about the proverbial slippery slope, no? We might be worried that if you'll let women sit in the sukkah, God forbid, it's going to lead to mixed dancing. It's going to lead to wearing tefillin. It's going to lead to blowing shofar. It's going to lead to other mitzvahs. And by the other mitzvahs is a concern, right? So the second mahalach is the approach of slippery slope. Now, one brief ha'ara on this sugya. The way the Ran puts the sugya together, the Ran is basically saying whether you hold Nashim Somchas Rishus or not depends on Michu B'yada Chachamim or not. That depends on whether they protested when the Eved does mitzvahs or not. That means that there's a full equation between women and Avodim in terms of mitzvah saseh shazman grama. That means that if you paskin, like we Ashkenazim paskin, that women recite a bracha, a mitzvah saseh shazman grama, Avodim would also recite a bracha, a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. That seems to be the pshat in the sugya when all the dust settles. The only reason why this is a fiddish is because Rav Soloveitchik did not say it. The Rav has an approach that he says in a number of places that Rabbeinu Tam says women recite a bracha on mitzvah saseh shazman grama because the bracha is asher kitchon mitzvah v'tzivanu. Women have the same kedushas yisrael as men. They're all part of the same group. We're all klal yisrael. There's kedushas yisrael. You can say asher kitchon mitzvah. Avodim don't have full kedushas yisrael. The Rav says that although avodim have the same practical obligation and mitzvos as women have, but they are coming at it from two completely different places. Women fundamentally are mechuyavos in 613, but we give them leniency and exemption from some of them in the sense of they don't have to do it. Avodim fundamentally do not have a chiyuv. We give them, fundamentally Avodim do not have any chiyuv at all. They are not really kadosh b'kdushas Yisrael. Yeah, if they want to do the mitzvahs, they can. But for sure, Rav Soloveitchik said, they can't recite a bracha on the mitzvah. The impression you get from the way the Ran presents the sugya is that if you hold women recite a bracha, mitzvah saseh shazman grama, avodim recite a bracha, which is exactly, or it's totally different than the way the Rav said it. The Rav said that women recite a bracha, but avodim do not. This issue happens to be a huge machlokes in Achronim. If you look in the new Tosis Harash that Moshe Rav Kook put out, so footnote 4 gives you like 20 different Achronim this way and 15 Achronim that way as to whether avodim recite a bracha mitzvah saseh shazman grama. It is a there is a literature on that question. Okay. Ladies, any questions or comments or observations?
When I sit under the bed schach this year, I'll just pat myself on the back and say, what a great person I am. I'm letting other people do their mitzvah. It'll fill me with so much.
I don't know. I was just clapping for you.
But stay the bracha, though. Stay the bracha, even though you're sitting under
the bed. Stay the bracha under the bed schach.
Yeah, Tanya?
So the way you framed it with the Rav, then there is a connection between Tefillin and Sukkah, because Yetzias Mitzrayim and like the very special relationship between Kadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael, and then Sukkah is also like L'man Yedu Doros Seichem, like it has that whole specialness. And so then that would...
In other words, there is like a certain hashgafic similarity, but the Ran's question of Al Pi Halacha, there is no Aveira in sitting in the sukkah is still a kasha that you could ask. I should point out that many achronim note that this ran is against a famous oneg yontif. The oneg yontif was the Rav of Bialystok. In his tshuvas, he has the famous idea, as we saw in Daf Tes, that Shem Shamayim is chal al hasukkah, which means that there's like a certain kedusha on the sukkah. The din is that if something is hektish, you can't use it. So the Oneg Yontif writes that it's usur for women to sit in the sukkah because the sukkah has kedusha and you can't get hana'a from a sukkah. You can't get hana'a from hektish, right? This is like, wow, they don't teach this to you like in high school, no? Whether you're in Tells, Yeshivat Maharat, you've never heard this one, right? That's the famous Oneg Yontif. You clearly see from the presentation of the Ran, not like that. The Ran is saying that there's no Isser being in the Sukkah. The Oneg Yontif says there might be. Okay, ladies, we should have a Gemar Chasima Tova, a Gutyar. We should be Zocha to Mechil Slicha and Kapara, and to the Simcha that comes after that Mechil Slicha and Kapara. This coming Thursday is Yom HaKippurim. I think next Thursday is sometime Mov Chol HaMoed Sukkot. We're going to take the week off. I have no idea which end is going to be up at that point. We'll try to resume after Yontif. Okay? Excellent. Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi Schwartz.
Merci.
Merci. Merci.